Well, we thank you for coming to the conference today, and I thank you for coming to our breakout session. So we're going to have a little bit of an interactive time, and we're going to have a good time. My name is Larry. This is my wife, Kathy. And between the two of us, we're going to share a little bit of what we've been through and what we've learned about it. But before I get into that, how many of you have been in the hospital? How many of you learned something about being in the hospital?
We'd rather not be.
Did any of you say, I like it here, I like this homemade food, and I like all the attention I get when I push this call bell, and I just love these hard mattresses? And how many of you, did any of you ever have to share a room with somebody? Now, there were days when there used to be semi-private rooms.
Yeah.
And I remember being a patient once where the two of us had to share a TV. And there was one TV on the wall with a curtain between the two of us, but we shared the TV and we had the remote. And my roommate was a night person, which means he was awake at night. And the TV was always on. And I like it quiet, and it really wasn't very conducive to getting well. I remember saying, I need to get out of here. They're going to kill me here. And sometimes hospitals are tough places to be. How many of you learned something good that you want to share about being a patient in a hospital?
It's always better for you if you do encourage the people that are taking care of you.
Oh, yes.
And also, when you're in there, you have an open door for testimony.
Yes.
And how you handle things. Mm-hmm. Not that that was always perfect and could be grouchy.
Yes.
But it gives you a chance.
Yes.
To encourage them.
Yes.
Their work is hard, and you know, you think you're being wrong, but they have to go through it every day.
Did any of you have a nurse that you felt was compassionate? Had some compassion for you? Have any of you had a nurse that you felt it was a job? And they were in there and they're going to collect a paycheck at the end of the week. And do you feel that some of the people taking care of you had probably more issues than you did, that wanted to share with you, oh, let me tell you, we're short-staffed today, and, you know, my husband just left me, and my kids are in trouble in school, and it's like, they're unloading on you.
Psychologist. The psychologist there.
Right.
They were a mess.
Yeah.
I guess that's why they went into the trade.
Yeah, that's right. That's why they're there, many of them.
When I was in for a long surgery, I was in like for 3 weeks, and I was in Hershey Hospital. And this nurse was she was efficient, but she was, you could tell she was just burning, angry.
Yeah.
You know, with those,
and roll over, I'm going to give you this shot,
yeah,
whether you like it or not. Right?
You know, I'm going to make it.
Yeah.
So I just asked her, I said, is there something going on in your life, mm-hmm, that you're struggling with?
Good.
And she just broke down in tears.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it was a chance to minister again.
Yep.
We have so many that we let pass by because we're being well.
Right. Other things that maybe you learned in the hospital.
Yeah, one thing I was going to say is this is, having both had good and bad experiences in hospitals, I'll say this. It's very important to see the difference between the two. When you have a good experience and a person who's like an angel, basically you can see how that looks to other people by you experiencing what other people are showing you.
Yes.
But if a person looks like, I'm not going to say the other side of it, but if there are bad news, you can also see that too. And what that type of experience does, or those experiences, is it helps you to see what you look like to other people. It's almost like a mirror.
Yeah.
So in my case, I decided, you know what, I don't look like the other person. I don't look like the angel as much as I can toward other people. Mm-hmm. So it encouraged me to try to be more compassionate to other people, because that's how they see me, like I see other people.
Right.
So it was that window even to my own soul.
Right. Right. That's good. And I'm going to go there in just a minute. So that's good. Other thoughts about being in the hospital, what you learned? Did you have nurses that were good at starting IVs? and maybe nurses that weren't so good surgeons. Did you ever have a nurse say to you, this is the first time I've tried this, or I haven't done this in a long time? And you don't want them coming at you with a catheter saying, well, it's been a while since... I don't think so. Can we get someone that knows what they're doing? Well, I started there because I think it's helpful for you to know my background and also Kathy's background. I am a registered nurse. I am a registered nurse for 55 years now. And when I started 55 years ago, nursing... was what I consider a calling. I felt I was being called into nursing. Nursing did not pay much back 55 years ago. You didn't go into nursing to get rich. And 55 years ago, it was primarily a woman's profession. Only 2 or 3% were men. So I was a minority in a primarily a woman's profession. And I felt I was being called into that. Well, Uncle Sam had something to say, too. If you remember 55, 60 years ago, there was a war going on in Southeast Asia. Mm-hmm. And what was interesting about this war at that time was that they needed nurses. And what was interesting, if you remember back then, women did not go into combat units. And so they needed male nurses in Southeast Asia. And being a male nurse and Uncle Sam, you remember the draft? Mm-hmm. We still have to register for selective service. Right. Yeah. You know, my sons all had to go, I think, when they turned 18. And that was back when you went to the post office, you filled out a form, and you registered. Well, there was a draft in effect. And you remember those signs? Uncle Sam says, I want you. Mm-hmm. Well, Uncle Sam said to me, I want you. And it was like, ah. So that was the start of my 55 years as a combat nurse in Vietnam, seeing 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds dying. And not a pleasant experience, but it certainly opened my eyes to the way politics handles wars. And I'm at this point now in my life where I can look back and say, that was not a very good time of my life. But, as Dr. Starr said, everything happens to us for a reason, and we need to look at the benefits of those situations. So 55 years of being a nurse, and my wife also has a health care background. I'll let her talk in a little bit so she can share that with you. But it's interesting, looking at health care from the nurse's standpoint, taking care of patients in a bed in pain, and then being that patient in the bed. And how now people are taking care of me. And I don't know about you, but as I get older, nurses are looking younger. Doctors are looking younger. Like they could be your children and grandchildren. And it's like, hold on here. Do you know what you're doing? Type of situation. And having been around the block myself, I can tell when someone is comfortable putting that catheter in. And when they're not comfortable putting that catheter in, and I've always said, you got to put yourself in the hands of other people and have some confidence in them. So that's my background with regard to what we're going to be talking about today for a little bit. I believe health and wellness is a combination of the wellness of three realms of us: body, mind, and spirit. I believe that if you're going to be healthy, we need to have a health that encompasses all three of those things. You can't just have a physical body that's healthy if you don't have your mind healthy and your spirit healthy. Likewise, if your mind is unhealthy, it's going to look like your body is unhealthy and your spirit's unhealthy. And likewise, if you don't have a walk with God, then you're going to be suffering physically and mentally as well. So I believe in that holistic appearance of health. So we're going to talk about that in a little bit, but the title of our talk today is Piling Up Stones. And we're going to be talking about Joshua. So we're going to be going to the book of Joshua, not right now, but we're going to be talking about Joshua and how he led the children of Israel across what river?
Jordan.
The Jordan River. It's surprising how many people say, the Red Sea. Well,
that's Moses.
That's Moses. Very good. So, and Joshua led the children of Israel across the Jordan River into what land? The Promised Land, the land of Canaan, which was the Promised Land. And he had them pile up two piles of stones. One pile of stones was on the other side of the Jordan River in the land of Canaan. The first place that they stopped was a place called Gilgal. And he had them pile up stones there. And that pile of stones, he wanted them to remember some things. But he had them also pile up a pile of stones where? In the riverbed. Mm-hmm. Now, if you remember the story, the riverbed opened, Jordan River opened, and so that was one miracle. And then the children of Israel crossed on dry land, which was the second miracle of that. And he had them pile up a pile of stones in the riverbed. And the Jordan River, what happened after they got into the Promised Land? What happened to the Jordan River? It came back to where it was. So that pile of stones is now under the water. And we're going to talk about piles of stones to remember and piles of stones that we need to put under God's grace, God's goodness. Let him cover it over. Forget it. Are there some things you want to forget? I'll tell you, if you've ever had pain, do you want to remember the pain that you went through? Not necessarily. But do you want to maybe remember what God brought you through? Of course. So that's where the title, Piling Up Stones, is coming from. Remembering things and forgetting things. The Bible tells us in John 16:33, in the world ye will have tribulations. Anyone who goes through life saying, oh, I have no troubles, I have no trials, I have no tribulations, is, of course, not telling the truth. We are going to have problems.
Right.
And as we get older, tell me about our trials and tribulations. Do they get less or do they get more?
More.
They seem to get more, and I think a lot of it has to do with our bodies just wear down and wear out. We can handle one trial at a time pretty well. But what happens when these trials and these tribulations pile up? That's where things start to get tricky. Our bodies can handle one thing at a time and rejuvenate and then get ready for the next thing. And as you look up how our bodies handle situations, remember I said we are holistic. We're three realms: body, mind, spirit. We can handle like one thing at a time. The short term we handle a lot of times with the fight or flight response. You've all heard of the adrenaline that you get. Right. You're driving down the road, minding your own business, and a car pulls right out in front of you, right? And suddenly you go into fight or flight. What happens physiologically? What are some of the things that your body does suddenly to withstand this alarm, this reaction? What happens to your heart rate? Okay, it goes up. Tell me about your blood pressure. It goes up. Tell me about your pupils. If you were looking in somebody's eyes, they dilate, they get big so that they can take in more information. Tell me about your blood flow to your skeletal muscles. increases. Tell me about the blood flow to your gut. Goes down. Blood gets shunted someplace else. And this is that fight or flight, that response that we get to adrenaline. Your blood sugar goes up. Your body all of a sudden produces lots of blood sugar. Your blood sugar goes up so that you can run or you can fight or do whatever. How long does that reaction last? It's fairly short. Sometimes it can be minutes, but I often, you can feel the surge and then, you know, you can feel, okay. So that person that pulled out in front of you, and hopefully you hit the brakes and you avoided the accident, correct? But sometimes
it doesn't happen.
And now you're dealing with a more long-term effect of this thing that all of a sudden is a trial or this tribulation or this thing that now we've gone into a longer term resistance phase, and now our bodies need to start to develop something called cortisol. The cortisol is a longer term stress response. This is something that our pituitary gland tells our adrenal cortex, which is sitting on top of our kidneys, to produce a longer-term cortisol level. And this cortisol now gets into sodium retention and water retention, so it maintains a higher level of blood flow, and blood pressure stays up, and heart rate stays up, and all those things. You can see where I'm going with this for long-term physiologic response. Sometimes we have hypertension, we have issues with our heart, we have issues with sodium and water retention, because of stress on our bodies over a long period of time. And there is a point at which our body finally says, I'm tired, I'm exhausted, I can't produce any more adrenaline, I can't produce any more cortisol, I am tired, and you go into exhaustion phase, and then people get sick. So that is fine if it's one occurrence. What happens if you have an occurrence after an occurrence after an occurrence after an occurrence? Is there a point at which your body says, I can't handle this anymore?
Yep.
And you go into exhaustion phase quickly, and your body breaks down, and now you've got issues not only physically, but now we've got some emotional issues and some spiritual issues that go along with it. We're going to pull all this together as we get closer to the end of the talk. I played football in high school. Anybody else play football? I learned a lot playing football. I learned a lot about teamwork. I learned a lot about playing my position, because how important it was that all the players on our team were doing the same thing, covering our sections of the field. I learned a lot about things that were legal and things that were illegal. I played defense, so my goal was to keep people from scoring. So my job was to tackle people, put them down, but don't hurt them, and put them down so that I didn't get hurt. And most of the time, my tackles were legal. But there were some times when things were... And the coach coached us how to stay legal, but how to get close to that line. And I don't know about those of you who played. Did you have coaches that, okay, we got to keep this legal, but let's get this guy down. And there was things called team tackling. Do you remember team tackling? Hit him high, hit him low.
We don't.
And there were some guys that were carrying the ball that were bigger than me. Well, I always tried to go for the legs. You get the legs out, and usually the guy will go down. Well, if you had a teammate and the two of you were running after this guy, you could do team tackling where one would hit him high, one would hit him low, you'd get him down. Well, there was one thing that was definitely illegal, and it was called piling on. Mm-hmm. And piling on was one of those things that was kind of iffy when it came to the officials. Because if you were doing team tackling and you got him down, one more guy on top, now all of a sudden could call a flag. Now we're piling on. And piling on was very interesting. If the ball came out, when you were doing team tackling, I remember our coach saying, keep him up, get the ball. Get the ball out. And if you got the ball out, you had a chance for a turnover. And then it was like anything is fair. If that ball is loose, we had some big piles going after the ball. And I was usually on top of the pile. But there was one time I was on the bottom of the pile. And I remember thinking, I don't care who has the ball, just get off. Because I probably had 1,000 pounds worth of guys on top of me. And now I was only 150 pounds. Yeah. I was 150 pounds. piling on is a challenge to the person on the bottom of the pile. I'm wondering how many of us have Satan piled on. Think back to your situations. Mm-hmm. Have there been any of you that have felt like, okay, I have one time Satan attacked me. But how many times did he go boom, 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 and he was piling on, and you're saying, hey, this is not fair, this is illegal, you want to throw the flag on Satan? Anybody felt like their life was piled on? As Christians, Satan has a target on your back. Now remember, if you're not a Christian, Satan is probably letting you go your way. But for Christians, we got a target on our back because Satan wants us to say, that's it, I'm going to curse God and die. Or he wants us to ruin our testimony. Piling on. Job. I mean, everyone knows the story of Job. But what I think was interesting was when you look at the second chapter of Job, the piling on that Job got, like right from the get-go. And I had to look this up just to make sure I got it right. The Sabaeans sold his oxen and asses. That was the first thing. And while that servant was still talking, someone came in and said, fire has come down and devoured your sheep. And while that guy was still talking, somebody came in and said, the Chaldeans stole all your camels. And while he was still talking, somebody came in and said, a great wind took all your sons and daughters away. Talk about piling on. And what did Job say at the end of chapter 2? The Lord gave, the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord.
Amen.
What a testimony. And it says, in all this, Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. And I was thinking, who was that being a testimony to? Think about the servants that knew what all happened.
His friends.
Right. He had three friends.
In quotes.
Yeah, in quotes. And was he being a testimony to Satan? Because Satan knew what he was doing to Job through all this. And I'm thinking, what an opportunity, what a testimony he was. And here we are 2,000, 10,000 years ago that he, I think Job is the oldest book in the Bible. So Job was really an antiquated situation. But look at all the people over the years that are now being benefited by knowing how Job handled this. Let me tell you about my story, and then I'm going to turn it over to Kathy. 2 years ago, I was still working as a nurse. I worked well past my 70s as a nurse, because we all know that nursing is hurting right now. We need lots of nurses. I was working, and a nurse said to me, you're short of breath. And I said, well, I am 70, so, I expect to be a little bit short of breath. And she said, no, you're short of breath. And so And Kathy said, yeah, you're short of breath. So I thought, okay, I'll go to the doctors, I'll have this checked out. The doctor said, okay, your EKG looks okay, blood work looks okay, but let's do some further testing. Don't you love it when they say, let's do further testing?
Yeah.
And I thought it was kind of useless, but okay, I'll have my stress test done and everything. I failed my stress test. They wouldn't even let me leave the room. The test was so much of a failure. So they checked me in the hospital. They said, we're going to do cardiac cath. We're going to do some stents. Got on the cardiac cath table, and right away the doctor said, no, this is more than I can handle. So the very next morning, I was having my chest opened for bypass surgery. Five blockages. Now, you only have three arteries in your heart. And so I had five blockages of three arteries. And ended up with quadruple bypass. They couldn't bypass the fifth blockage. So I was evidently a heart attack waiting to happen. You know, 90% blockage of five spots. They stopped my heart from beating for an hour and 36 minutes. So clinically, I was dead. Now, I was on bypass machine, so the heart-lung machine was doing all the work. So I went through cardiac rehab. I thought I was doing pretty good. Then I got COVID. And for a week, I was at home with COVID. Temperature of 100, 304. How many have had COVID that you know? Okay. So I was out of the hospital. And eventually, my pulse ox dropped so low, I was in the 70s. Your pulse ox should be in the 90s.
Yeah.
Ended up in the hospital again. So you can see this starting to pile up here. So couldn't breathe. And while I was in the hospital with COVID, now I had just had the open heart surgery. While I'm in the hospital with COVID, I'm saying, my back hurts. And I thought maybe it was that nice soft mattress that they have on those beds in the hospital. Yeah, they're nice. And turns out I had kidney stones. So now, open heart surgery, bypass surgery, COVID, can't breathe, now kidney stones. And one of the stones is blocking the ureter of my one kidney. Now my kidney's swollen and they're afraid I'm going to lose my kidney. And so they put some stents in, so on and so forth. We thought, okay, we got that taken care of. Went home, fell in the bathtub.
Oh.
Broke six ribs down my back, collapsed my lung. Piling on? Okay. Hey, Satan, time out. This is no good. As Dr. Starr said, you know, there's a point at which we need to say, I can't do this. What can we remember and what can we forget? Those two piles of stones, there are some things we want to forget. Hebrews 12:1 says, let us lay aside every weight and every sin which doth so easily beset us. Are there some things we want to forget? I wanted to forget that those hospital stays. But Philippians 4:8 says, whatever things are true, whatever things are honest, whatever things are just, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, and if there be any praise, think on these things. Can you see the two piles? One pile I need to remember. I need to remember what God has brought me through. And I need to forget some things that I went through with this. So at the end of Joshua 4, 6, and 7, it says, the people asked him, what sign does this pile of stones mean? And what mean ye by these stones? It says, these stones shall be for a memorial unto children forever. We go through things so that we can be a memorial for some of the things that we're talking about just today. Kathy, please come up. Tell them what you learned about taking care of me and then what you were in through.
Very good.
Was I a good patient?
No, he was not. A little bit about my background. I worked 44 and a half years in long-term care. So I thought I was prepared to be a caregiver, but it's totally different when it's your spouse or your family member, because he didn't want to listen to anything I had to say. At one point I said, I'm going to leave this house and leave you alone until you can behave yourself. But I was encouraged by my sister-in-law. She said, Kathy, accept help. Because a lot of us, especially if we're caretaking for a spouse, we think we've got this. We don't need help. But we do need help. And if nothing else, we need the encouragement and the prayer and just someone to talk to. And what was really great was men from our church actually would come and visit with Larry, which was really good because then I could just get away and, you know, do what I wanted to do. And it kind of gave me a break. So I ran downstairs and in the basement and let them have him. But you know, you have to look for and embrace the humor in situations. I learned that very quickly. You have to. In long-term care, we have this saying we call, let's offer moments of joy, because moments of joy release endorphins that help you feel better, help, you know, relieve the stress, and give you a little more patience with whoever you're having to take care of. And you have to make a choice. You know, we all have choices to make. So we have to make a choice to either be positive or be negative. And I really, you know, the Lord, through many Bible studies over the years, has really showed me that, you know, to be positive, you know, let the negative go. Because, you know, if you ever went up to someone and said, well, how you're doing, and then they unload like the last 20 years on you, they're like, you know, that exhausts you. And the Lord has given me many verses. And one of the things, Romans 15:13, you know, tells us to abound in hope. And so, you know, going through Larry's illnesses, because they were, it was like 2.5 years, it's like, will this ever, ever end? You know, and but I knew others were praying for us, and we had a lot of encouragement, and we all need encouragement. We need someone to help push us through these difficult situations that we face, and it all goes back to accepting help and accepting that encouragement and looking for the positive, because God is with us. You know, and he doesn't want us to be woe is me. So, and Larry can tell you, we found a lot of humor in our situations over the, you know, his illnesses and mine. I was diagnosed with cancer at the end of 2013 as soon as the stars retired and went on the road. And then we have the privilege of saying we were Pastor Chris's first need when it came to an illness. I went for what I thought was a routine colonoscopy. It turned out not to be. The doctor told us right then and there that I had cancer. He did not need to wait for the test results to come back. I had, and I want to put a plug in, if you haven't had it, get it done. Don't put it off like I did for 5 years. But we knew right away within the first week after some, you know, continuous testing, the first week, the colonoscopy happened on a Friday, and we knew within the following Friday, you know, how desperate the situation was. But that night when we got home, because our life had changed in a moment, I mean, literally a moment. And when the doctor came in, and of course Larry and I both working in the healthcare, we knew that when they didn't let me go right away, they said, we want to wait and go get everyone. We knew that, you know, there was something going on. So we went home. Larry called Pastor Chris right away. He and Jenny came that night. And when they left, you know, after praying with us and talking to us, we had such a peace. Such a peace. I slept the next 6 months. Larry's the worrier of the two of us, and so he fretted and lost a lot of sleep. And I encourage you, if you face an illness in your life, get you a good support group, people that you can call and say, "Hey, I need prayer." And I always go back, look for the humor in the situation, look for the positive in the situation. We knew we had a whole army praying for us. My mother, Larry's mother, was still living at the time. She was constantly writing Sheldon at the Sword of the Lord. I got a personal letter from him, you know. And so we had people all over the world, I really, truly believe, praying. And the Lord quickly brought together the perfect storm. We chose to go the medical route. We did not have time to make decisions. We did not have time to think, to stop and say, well, can I think about this? And so I always tell people, God brought together the perfect oncologist, radiologist, surgeon. And, you know, and I always liken it to sometimes when we're faced with choices to make in our health care, we put things off too long. And, you know, usually, you know, God is going to give you your plan, but are you going to grasp it right away? It's like, you know, the emergency personnel come knocking at your door because it's flooding and you don't leave.
Yeah.
You know, he sends the rowboat because the water's past the first house and you don't get in that rowboat. And then you're on the roof and the helicopter goes by and you think, well, you know, I'm going to wait and think about this. And then you drowned. You know, open your eyes up. Let the Lord give you their answers and go with it. Because Psalm 15 says, call upon the Lord when troubled. Well, we all say, well, we pray, but do we do what the Lord puts on our heart?
Love for the answers.
You know? So some of the things I learned through that experience going through the cancer and, you know, taking care of Larry was that we all have a choice and we can choose to turn things over to God and not take them back. And that's what a lot of us fail to do. We say, well, it's in the Lord's hands, but do we truly believe it?
Mm-hmm.
You need to put it there and leave it there. And there's an old song, you know, put it in God's hands and just leave it there and trust Him to take care of it. And we have a choice to wait on and accept God's answer. You know, we live in this instant gratification society, and we're not going to always get the answer that we want, and we're not going to get that instant gratification. What I've learned through all these experiences is I ask God to give me the strength to accept the outcome and that He give me the strength to deal with what He says. You know, Larry and I both, because of our health issues, deal with things still that's related to those. Now, we could let them bog us down. You know, Larry still has some cardiac issues, but we don't allow that to keep us from getting up and doing things.
Amen.
You know, and it's also taught me to be very sensitive to others with their, you know, whatever they're going through, whether it be physical or emotional. We all need to be sensitive. And not everyone is on the same spiritual level, and we need to recognize that.
Right.
I grew spiritually. Oh, my goodness, did I grow. And God really taught me how to wait on Him. And to wait on what He decides. And He's going to give me the strength to get through whatever situation that I'm in. And, you know, God puts you in different situations. And Larry and I have, you know, when he had COVID, we said, you know, we really need to be a testimony through these trials. And I really believe we've been able to be a real testimony to all the medical people. You know, we both went back to work. Larry actually did go back to work after his bypass surgery for a little while. He and I were actually the COVID test team at the nursing home I worked at until he got COVID. And then he chose not to go back again. So, but, you know, you need to look for the positives in every situation. Because a positive attitude is going to really help you get through life situations. And God does not want us to be unhappy. When I had cancer, the doctor assumed, you know, towards the end of my treatment, he said, well, Kathy, you'll probably never go back to work. and my secretary has started off the paperwork for disability. And I'm like, and Larry can attest to this, I'm like, I'm not disabled. I am going back to work. Because Larry and I talked about it. I thought, how could I have all these people praying for me, and I get to a certain point, and then I say, okay, I'm disabled. Mm-hmm. I can't work now. I can't do anything. I've got to sit at home and go, poor as me. No, I was determined to go back to work. And, a lot of people, and even the nurses at the oncology center were surprised when, I would go back for follow-ups, and I'm like, hey, I'm back to work. You know, and what a testimony I was to the people that I worked with, because they, working in the healthcare field, they knew just how ill I was and how close to death I was. And I'll be honest with you, there were days I prayed that God would just take me and just be done with it. And you could probably relate to that. Because sometimes the treatments, the cure is worse than what the cancer is. But, I choose to allow God to be my master planner and I pray every day that God help me to accept, what He has, done in my life and where He has brought me and, for the people that He's put in my life. And we have to realize too, through all the illnesses, there's no real state of normal in our lives, because we change, everything around us changes, the people change, our situations change, we're growing constantly, hopefully. So we have to choose to move our normal meter. That's a thermostat that in a lot of homes is forever being tweaked, so we have to realize that things just don't stay the same. We're not in that box constantly. So let God be your master planner, to help you get through all these situations. And I think one of the biggest things that God taught me was, there is no normal to life. Never, ever is there any normal. And because things do change. One of the verses that God gave me when Larry was actually in emergency surgery was Isaiah 41:13. He holds my right hand and He tells me not to fear. Because when he was in surgery, it was late at night. There was only one other person in the waiting room, and I'm not even sure that they were there for the surgery, for anyone in surgery. But there was a code called to the ER or to the OR. And my heart just dropped to my feet, and I went into that fight or flight thing. I was sick at my stomach because, I knew, Larry had had the cardiac issues in the past, and here they are, he's in emergency surgery. I had signed, a few days, that was about halfway into the hospital stay, correct? I had signed, and unbeknownst to him, I had signed permission to have him put on a ventilator if the need arose. And I was reading through the Bible, and I happened to be in Isaiah, and God gave me Isaiah 41:13. He holds my hand.
Amen.
And He spared both Larry and I. So.
Amen. So remember the piles of stones. One pile of stones we need to pile up and let God's goodness, that river, to just cover it over, forget it. And a pile of stones that He wants us to remember and to share with others and be a blessing for others that might be going through it, of God's goodness in our own lives. So that's the pile of stones that we were talking about. If you haven't had a chance to read that story in Joshua, it just came so clear to me as I was going through trial after trial after trial, what piles, piling on, and Satan is after us. We've got targets on our backs. Thank you for being here.